It is time for another bonus episode of Pink is the New Podcast by me, Trent Venegas. And usually I do a weekly roundup of entertainment and pop culture, gossipy news, just for fun. But as you may know by now, whenever I have like a fun topic or something that's not necessarily specific to the week, I tend to do a bonus episode where, because there's just too much fun stuff to talk about. And this instance is no exception. Actually, this is probably going to be the best bonus podcast I've done yet, and I may ever do, because as you may know, and those of you who follow me on social media are well aware of the fact that I have been working on an HGTV show. It's called A Very Brady Renovation, where HGTV bought the house that was filmed for the exterior shots of the Brady Bunch, and we renovated the entire house to make it look like the house did on the show. So if you're in the know, you know that the original house was a split level that didn't even have a second story. So our challenge was to turn a split level, one story home into a two story giant mansion of a Brady house. So because I worked on the show, I was able to become friends with some very cool people who worked on it, including Dylan Eastman, who is the designer and the project manager for the entire project. And Dylan agreed to talk to me for a little bit so we can talk together about what we did to make the Brady House become a reality. So Dylan's here with me now.
Thanks, Trent. Thanks for having me.
And ever since I started doing this podcast a couple months ago, one of the first things I thought of was like, I have to get Dylan and us to just like talk about what we did on the show, what he did on the show, because I don't want it to sound like I had like this major impactful role as an associate producer. I think I did a fairly decent job with what needed to be done as it came trickling down to me with research. My pop culture background helped with the Brady research, and it wasn't very hard for me to like watch hours and hours of Brady Bunch episodes for me to have more information about how we were going to perfectly match the house. But I can tell you with the complete utmost honesty, there was no one on this project who worked more than Dylan, because he was working on this project before the project was even a done deal. Like last summer, months before, the team was assembled and cameras started rolling, Dylan had moved cross country. He came to Los Angeles and relocated his life to work 24/7 on this project. So I could spend this whole entire time just talking about how much I'm impressed by my friend Dylan and the great work that he did, but I think it's going to be more fun if we both talk together about what we accomplished. So the first thing that we wanted to talk about was the first impressions of the original house. So when exactly was your first day when you came to town and you saw the house for the first time?
Yeah, so shortly after the network bought the house, like after it became public that who the whole drama behind the bidding thing and who had finally won it and all that, I got a call pretty much as soon as the contract was signed that was very vague because certain details couldn't be released yet. And then we had an informal meeting here at the house early August, where we all, between the production company and the network and myself, looked at what they had just bought and started to think about what was the directives and the requests from the network as far as what needed to happen for the show, what's the story of the show, what's our mission. And so the first impression was I had seen the real estate ad, and you only get so much information by flipping through photos,
right?
Because you can't, sometimes it's kind of hard to, unless there's like a floor plan uploaded, you're just like trying to go, okay, well then this bedroom's behind that bedroom,
right. And
which photo am I looking at right now? And just kind of assumed, so I had I had grown up in the mid 80s and I got home from school first. Mm-hmm. So I was going to watch Lassie, Flipper, or the Brady Bunch. It was pretty much like one of the options of what you were going to watch at that time. And so I had probably seen the majority of the Brady Bunch episodes, but it had been a very, 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 very long time.
Wait, you think you didn't watch the whole series back when it was in reruns?
I don't remember. I do remember having that, like, this frantic feeling, like a life lesson when I had watched all the Flippers. I watched every single Flipper, and I had this moment in time where I thought, like, oh, well, tomorrow there's not going to be a new Flipper. Like, things do come to an end.
Right.
There are finite resources. Right. There's only so much of anything.
Right.
And so I don't think that I watched much of season 5.
Interesting.
Because it seemed so... It just didn't... When we were... Both of us were rewatching the show more recently to become very quick experts on what not only you were focusing on, like, storyline, and I'm, like, trying to absorb everything about the house and the furnishings and all that stuff. I just didn't... A lot of things from, like, season 1, season 2 came back. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this episode. But in season 5, it was just... It didn't seem as familiar. So I didn't really recall... I mean, long story short is... Here we are. It's late 2018. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of come into the house assuming that it's at least vaguely like the show. And so did it look vaguely familiar? So at our first meeting, I'll say that, like, all of us were like, this house is nothing. It's nowhere near the same. It's not as big. Nope. It's half as big as it is now. Nothing is the same. Now I will reserve the right to retract my previous thoughts, because as time's gone on, I've come to appreciate the design elements in the original house that they absolutely brought into the show house. So they were not, it's not a case that these two houses are completely different, but it wasn't the same enough for us to not have to redo it, right? So we still had to move walls and take things down. So even though you came in the front door and you had an elevated entry and you took two steps down into the living room, and then you have the dining room on the left and the living room on the right, like what's in that old house?
Right.
You step down two steps and the dining room's in the left and the living room's in the right.
The placement of the rooms was correct, but the rooms themselves were incorrect by a lot.
Right.
And then I think we also talked about the fact that there were design elements in some of the rooms that just seemed to suggest that someone who designed the set at least visited the house at some point, because where doors were and the way that rooms were laid out, especially the master bedroom and the way that the bathroom was hidden behind that wall, is very similar to the way that the master bedroom and the bathroom is on the show, except for in a completely different design way.
Yeah, I mean, and we could talk for hours about ways in which
we really
did production design on the original show absolutely absorbed the elements of this house and brought it into the show. So the long story short is it wasn't we're not going for like kind of like the Brady Bunch.
We're going for
these walls need to be within inches of what they may have been on the set. So like no matter what, we had to do a lot of work. So like first impressions is, you know, we're all sitting around a table. We're getting kind of like these directives of what's got to happen. And it is just like a mind blowing, like, this is such a high profile project, and we're sitting at a plastic table under a tent.
Yeah, in the backyard.
In a backyard. Yeah. And you're like looking around going like, we've got to do what?
Here's my question. So I'm sure that logically, because you're a designer and you're really good with like sketching out and making all of the models and all of that, like, I'm sure logically for you, you were like, yeah, so if we're going to make this house the real house, it has to be this big, this long, this tall, the rooms have to be this square footage. But when you actually saw the house and you're standing in it, could you see it? Like, could you see, like, okay, we got to knock this down and go out this way? And was it something you could visualize, or did you think, well, what did you think?
Yeah, so I mean, I think like during the initial impression, there was really no way, because I hadn't absorbed exactly what the show was. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that, I knew where
it was still taking form, right?
I knew where the kitchen needed to be, but I didn't know if it needed to be 12 feet wide or 14 feet wide or whatever. Like, I basically knew where the boxes needed to lay.
Right, right.
So, like, my biggest thought, so the scope of, like, the network's imperative, mm-hmm. There was two things that they wanted, and both of them were kind of like unobtainium in my mind at that mm-hmm. moment. Is like, number one, it has to look like the show. So
the interior has to look exactly like the interior on the show.
So the stressor is there. If anybody's watched like the specials where the girls get married or the movies, you realize that like the stuff they had in the movies wasn't exact. Nope. I mean, it was similar, but it wasn't exact. So anytime you say that you need to get exactly the same stuff that they had in 1969, not like a similar mid-century modern brass lamp, but the same brass lamp, all of a sudden the bar is raised, because like your options for plan B go out the window. And like, working on a lot of other network shows as mm-hmm. well as houses, if something doesn't come in,
you have more leeway.
If something gets broken and you've got a deadline, mm-hmm. you can go, okay, well, here's what we do have. Here's what we can make that's still spectacular. And you're going to be one of the only people that actually knows that you had a different plan, but it didn't quite pan out the way you wanted. But in this case, the after is known.
It's by set all, in by time. All of America, by all of the world. And we also have the added challenge of, you can watch the show on YouTube, on your phone, on your DVD, however you want, and pause it and say,
prove anyone wrong.
It is this exact thing, and you know, they did or they did not match it exactly. Yeah. What I will say about, because we talked a bit before about watching the show and what people remember.
Yeah.
I would bet good money that people who watched the movies from the 90s did not notice the changes.
Right.
Because I think that the movies painted in such broad strokes mm-hmm. that the color schemes were right. The placement was right. The horse was right.
Like, it's the, more about the story.
The stairs were right.
Yeah.
So I think when people, because I remember watching the movies in the 90s, and it did not, the things that were different about that, like the artwork, none of that reminded me like, oh, it's very different from the show. Now, I'm sure there are Brady fans who are very discerning and who noticed everything that was different.
Yeah.
And I'm very certain that those Brady fans are going to be at least hopefully positively critical about what we did, because, you know, we're gonna say we recreated the house, and they're gonna say, okay, let's see how well you did it, because I know the house in and out because they've watched it for 50, you know, the better part of 50 years. But I think generally people who have a passing, you know, understanding or remembrance of the Brady Bunch did not really think that the movies or the sequels were that different, except for like in the 80s when they updated the design elements or whatever. But anyways, we're getting off topic there. But so getting back to the scope of the whole project. So the two directives were, one, the interior has to look exactly like the show.
Right, which gives no real margin for
error
or options.
And
right?
the second directive was, the exterior, the front of the house, has to look completely unchanged. So we have to blow out the inside of the whole entire house, make a whole other second story.
Yes. Put a two-story behind a single story.
And not change the front exterior or add any elements
which,
that are not great.
Luckily for us, like one of the good story points behind this house is that the family that the network purchased it from, they bought it in the early 70s.
Right.
And it was largely never changed. So we did inherit a home and an envelope that largely kind of reflected what was seen in the 1969 establishing shot.
Right.
So, like, luckily from the front of the house, it wasn't like, there was more mission in the back of the house than the front of the house. There was things to change, landscaping and paint and all that, windows mm-hmm. and stuff, but at least we inherited that. But, like, having them say, like, yeah, it's got to be exact, and it you need to have no change to the front facade, the iconic look, and you're going like, but it's got to be exact to a thing that never actually existed.
One of the things that the Brady actors themselves, so we were very fortunate to get all six of the surviving Brady kids to be on our show. And not only do they appear on our show, but they interacted. So they did some work with all our HD hosts. Mm-hmm. So they were very, maybe not all of them. I think Christopher Knight was the most skeptical. I think Susan Olsen was a little skeptical too.
Yeah.
But they just could not understand how we were going to do it.
Yeah.
Because standing in the house as it used to be, it was hard for them. This is why I asked you, could you really see what was ahead? How it had to be done? Because they couldn't see it. I couldn't see it.
I'm not going to say no. And I believed that if it was possible, I could certainly figure out a way to do it. However, I have a bunch of bosses standing or people standing around like looking at me going like, can you do it? And I'm still like, I'm like calculating in my mind,
figuring
like
it out,
moving boxes around in space going like, I think so.
This is perfect because it gets to the next part that I want to talk about, the day to day of how the whole project went. And I remember at some point, and I'll go back, but I want to make this point because it's speaking to what you just said. There was a point, I want to say in January or February, where we talked about the fact that if we had a whole other year, or we had more time or all the time in the world,
if we were going to make this for the 51st anniversary,
that we could absolutely take our time to get absolutely every single thing precisely right as best we can. We ended up doing it anyway.
Yeah.
But like at some point, like midway through, we were just like, how are we going to do it? If we had more time for sure.
Yeah.
And by some miracle of miracles and hard work, and I'm not kidding you, like blood, sweat, and tears went into this project. Not only were we able to do all of that work in the time allotted, because there was a deadline.
Yeah.
There was a deadline of when it had to be revealed because the Bradys had a specific schedule and it had to be done.
It has to air on a certain date.
It has to air
to the 50th anniversary.
Exactly.
So your start date and your end date are pinned.
Yeah.
Your end goal is already, it's already been on TV. Everyone knows what it should look like.
And
you really have no option.
Just to get it done, and we did. But let's talk about the day to day. So, okay. So, we're in the house. You figured out what had to happen.
Yeah. Largely. I want to like, speak to one thing here. And that's kind of hard to convey in a show. So like a lot of projects, you will establish what you're going to do first. So in a typical construction job, the design will be done previously.
Okay.
It'll get permitted, approved, budget, whatever, schedule, break ground. And always, there's usually aesthetic changes and little things. There's things you have to do along the way that change. But like, we cannot overstate how much of this was being actively designed day by day by day. I'm putting next week's fire out the week before and trying to stay on top of everything. But like, you and I are both watching all of the episodes trying to absorb this, but there's no run-up time to become an expert, figure it all out, and then get it going. So like we've got the basic floor plan done, figured out, engineered, approved, request an expedited permit from the city. So in the time frame, it's like a month of design, a month for the LA permit, and then immediately start. So when you talk about day-to-day logistics, it's like we've got to figure out. I've worked on a lot of shows. I've done this for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really another show where there was essentially 14 hosts.
Yep.
So we're filming every single day, which is a kind of atypical for a lot of construction shows, at least at the scale of production that you were doing.
Right.
Like, we're not talking just like B-roll, but like a large amount of like audio and multiple cameras and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to get every day squared away for what the hosts are going to be able to do, who's going to be there that day. You're aware of like which rooms are they actually working on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to establish those tasks, but
like the planning in and of itself was huge. Like, it took so much time to just figure out what tasks had to be done, who we were going to designate was going to do which tasks according to their schedules over this, you know, many, many months project, not accounting for weather. I mean, it rained a lot this winter, and we dealt with all of that. And for me, the day-to-day was pretty much, and what we had to do was multi-tiered. So you were essentially everyone's boss. I mean, or maybe boss isn't the right word, but you were definitely at the top of the decision-making process because, again, you knew what had to be done overall. And from my perspective on the story end, we had to come up with ways to make what the talent did on camera more interesting, or at least
flow in from a video aspect. It has to flow through the episode.
Yeah, like,
it has to be planned out. Yeah. It's not just like you just do whatever task is available that day, because it has to make sense. We're working through the thing, and from that aspect of having so many different hosts, having a large production, this house happens to be on one of the larger lots in this neighborhood, but it's still a postage stamp compared to, like, I've built a house on the side of a mountain in Idaho, but we had 8 acres. So we could park cars out of the way. We could have storage containers bringing in materials that we needed for our next shoot or the next week's activities. But here it's like,
it's in a residential neighborhood with neighbors on either side of the house.
So we had to be cognizant of their needs. Mm-hmm. We there's limited place to park. Mm-hmm. There's basically, once you factor in the expansion of the house, the Brady's backyard, the existing garage, it's like, that's it. There's no other room. There's an LA River in the back.
We lucked out so much because the house on one side has no backyard. And there's no way, if the property was next door, there's no way. There's just no space there. So many things, and I talk about this, and I've talked about this before with other people, so many stars aligned with this project.
Mm-hmm.
The timing of when it went on sale.
Yeah.
The timing of when the project would be done in time for the 50th anniversary of the Brady Bunch, which is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The availability of all of the hosts, all 14 hosts that we had, and it all worked, all the scheduling worked out. Getting someone of your talent to devote all of this time to this singular project. And the fact that the land was big enough for us to do what we needed to do. And it was meant to be. It just
finding
was so
a good
meant
team
to be.
Of people, mm-hmm. like on the production side, we've got everyone is helping out doing things that isn't technically their job, but like, this has got to be ready for whatever. It's got to be ready for tomorrow or for the end of this month or for the end of the project. And the train just has to keep rolling. And it's like, failure is not an option.
Nope.
There's no option for a plan B.
Nope.
And we got a great builder that worked on a lot of other shows that happens to actually live not too far away.
Our head construction guy, Dave Clark, who is fantastic.
He's worked with a lot of my friends that I've worked on their shows, and he's worked on their shows, but in different places and different times. So we kind of like knew the same people, but we had never actually met.
At the start of this project, so we had never met before. So we met, worked together, became friends on this project. My assumption early on was that you and Dave must have been like friends forever, because you guys work so well together. You as the designer and the project manager, and he as the head of construction. It was just so seamless that I remember it was like months into this project where I was like, wait, what? Like, you had just met on this project as well. Like, there's so many serendipitous things that happened.
There's a lot of
things
about doing a construction TV show that's not just go hire a builder that has 100 trucks and giant, like some giant warehouse they work at. It's like, there's a lot of things to think about of like what it's going to take to do this, because there's times where the other work that's not on camera can't make any noise.
Right.
So like all of those logistics of like pause and move and being so fluid, like as soon as I knew what we had to do and when it had to be done, I called my friend Josh Temple, who's a host of House Crashers, who's here in Los Angeles.
And Josh is amazingly fun to work with.
Fun, funny guy, hard worker. Actually, the first show I ever worked on was with with Josh. He came to a house that I was working on as a builder, and he rolled in with his team, and kind of we've had a very funny, sarcastic relationship with each other. But I called him and I said, look, like I've got to do this thing in LA that's high profile. Mm-hmm. And I need to know, like, who is in the area that you think that you would trust from a television aspect. And he's like, what, you're going to do Brady Bunch? And I'm like, no, it's not what I'm working on. He's like, that's the only thing it could possibly be. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so in the news. So anyway, he told me that I absolutely had to talk to Dave. So then I called my friend Jason Jackson, who also worked on a lot of the Crasher shows and a lot of things. He did 500 episodes in 5 years, which is absolutely insane, because that's...
Holy crap.
It's like an episode, two episodes a week or something. Stupid.
That's insane.
And I said, who should I work... He's in Sacramento. I said, who should I work with? And he said, we have to talk to Dave Clark. That's so great. Like, everyone kept pointing me to it.
His reputation definitely preceded him.
And then eventually I was talking to Sarah Bendrick, who I know through... working on these shows as well, and she had her own show, and she's in San Diego, so I was like, will you come help us do the landscaping, because it's another person I trust. And I find out that Dave was the original contractor on her show, I Hate My Yard, like back in 2008 or 2009, 2010.
That's what I'm talking about, like so many things are so perfectly aligned with what needed to happen.
Yeah, so the only thing that didn't really align was the fact that it rained all winter.
But even that was something. I mean, you always have to account for weather, and you know, it doesn't rain in California except for when you don't need it to rain, and then it rains all the time in
California. But account for it is like hard, because on a normal project, you may say, okay, well, if you have an 8-month project, you're going to build in like 10 solid shutdown days for weather, and it's just basically based on NOAA averages and experience. But here, it's like it's typically not that rainy in LA versus the East Coast.
Right, just, exactly.
If you're working in Vermont or Idaho, if you get a foot of snow, you're still working, because the people are used to that being the average. Yeah. Whereas here, they're not going to go outside and frame a roof with rain jackets on, but we do that on the East Coast. Yeah. So a lot of that stuff was like, we didn't have an option to not keep moving forward, but we had gotten an entire month behind in concrete. Because you can't, even if you wanted to pour concrete on a Monday and it rains on Monday, you can't pour it on Tuesday.
Right.
Because now the inspections got canceled.
Oh, that's right.
So you have to request a new inspection, and then you have to go muck out all the footings. So you have to pull the rebar out, slop out all the water, because if you leave it there, everything's just going to settle.
Yeah.
So
are things that you don't account for. I mean, it's built into a schedule, I'm sure, but like in Southern California, you don't necessarily account for it as to be as big an effect, because it's not typical of the way
that... And also our schedule wasn't like... Our schedule was built, but I had to do it backwards.
Yeah.
I was told what the end date had to be.
And then you had to work back from that. And then I
calculated what had to happen to make that work. So it wasn't like I generated and said, okay, well, we'll be done in September. And in factor in rain days and stuff like that. It's like, you're going to be done on this day because of the needs for post-processing and editing and all the approvals for airing. It's like literally, you know, the end date, and then you're trying to figure out what you have to do. But anyway, long story short is like that day to day of just like two steps forward, one step back. Mm-hmm. And we still made it somehow. Like we still did it. We still pulled it off, and it required a amazing team of people where we could get slightly like irritated with each other because everyone's got competing interests. And then like 5 minutes later, we're fine. Like we've moved forward. We know that like we've just got to get it done.
And that brings us to like the next thing we're going to talk about is like the rush to finish. So when we got to like the last, what would you say, 2 months or the last month? Like it was more than just the last month. It was like the last 2 months when D-Day on the big, on the calendar circled in big red, and we knew it had to be done by this point. And we still had to So building the house is one thing. Furnishing the house is a completely different thing.
It's a whole separate, like, let's pretend there's like two different entire projects going on. Mm-hmm. So you have the on a normal construction project, you're going to be building a house for an owner. You do work with them on finishes for flooring, et cetera, and paint and such like that. But like typically an owner is either going to take over for furnishing it themselves, or you're working with an interior designer who's kind of like ordering on all that. And for Dave as the builder, he doesn't really care if the couch is there on time because he's got his job done.
Yep.
But our job is the entire package.
So all at the same
time. Our day to day is like, we get up in the morning, everyone gets here, we're having coffee, we're sitting here and we're hunting for like the next missing things on the list of Brady Land. And then you're hopping out and managing on construction. So it's almost like there's like two concurrent, like two different missions happening at the same time. So like,
and it's not just like a couch. It's like three couches, five, you know, 12 chairs and like a table and like, and not even just like the big ticket items, like decorations, mini figurines, artwork, and they have to be exactly right. They can't be, I mean, so the artwork is stuff that we played with because for that, for the most part, size-wise and in spirit, some things we got perfect. Right, like the poster artwork in the girl's bedroom we had to get right because it's so iconic. The wallpaper we had to get exactly right.
There's also considerations between like a show that was shot in the late 60s and 70s didn't necessarily have art clearances.
Right.
It was just one something they did.
It was kind of like the Wild Wild West. They kind of did stuff just, and they got away with it. It wasn't
norm,
a thing.
Right. And so now it is definitely the norm. And so some of the pieces through great research and people, Brady fans and people that run blogs that you talk to, these people have done a lot of the background research, particularly on the art. So some things we knew who the original artists were and could pursue that. And other things we didn't, but kind of, you know, in a way, luckily, a lot of their art is also, was very greatly reflected in things that are public domain. So,
and a show that is that old, it's practically in the public domain itself.
Almost, based on time.
I the one thing I want to say about the art is I'm super proud of the way it all turned out because the things that we had to get exactly right, like the clown artwork and the poster, the cat poster in the girl's room, we were able to source and clear and all of that. And artwork that we couldn't, we recreated that looked, that looks fantastic. Original artwork that looks like it belongs in the Brady House. And we did it ourselves. And I say we, not me, but our supervising producer, Christina Hilbig, she did an amazing job with so many of the art projects that are on the wall in the girl's bedroom. That's like where her, one of the rooms she blessed with her talents.
How do we even describe what these things are? It's like we'd be up late, like staring at these photos of like, is this in the girl's room, is this a monkey made out of yarn? Like, is like that what I'm seeing?
Exactly.
The wall?
I think people have this idea that when you're in quote unquote Hollywood, you have all the resources, like, why don't you just go to Paramount where they filmed it and then get all the stuff from them?
All the comments.
Or just ask them.
So we did launch.
Or they'll just tell you. This show's 50 years old. Those people aren't alive anymore.
Yeah.
And the materials don't exist anymore. They got rid of that stuff like 30, 40 years ago.
Well, and very critical to this is like both you and I were sitting around just like hashing out these ideas of like reaching out to fans for help because they're eager to help.
That was your
idea.
Your idea to open a crowdsourcing initiative where you were just like, look, there are all these fans who give us information about like where the pieces come from.
Right.
Like, you know, Scott Schultz, this amazing fan in New York. He's a big Brady fan, mostly because he's a fan of the design elements of the house and the furniture itself.
Yeah.
So he was a resource just for information wise. And then it was your idea that I'm so glad the network gave us the green light to do was to say, look, there are millions of fans around the world.
Right.
Let's, if some of them give us some of the things, then those fans that gave us the art pieces or the figurines or the furniture pieces, then they can have some ownership in the Brady House too. And your point that this really is like America's house because we grew up watching the house and now we had a way for those fans to help be a part of the process.
Like, even if it's just from an information standpoint, like, Scott had collected a lot of these things. So early on, a lot of what I'm doing is I'm just doing image search. So I'm searching like mid-century modern lamp, mid-century modern brass lamp.
Like these blind, like, cold searches.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I'm looking at thousands and thousands and thousands of images just trying to pattern recognize and be like, oh, okay, there's a lamp. But he would say, for example, like in the parents' room, like look for a Laurel tulip brass lamp, like Laurel Lamp Company. And all of a sudden that shortcut lets me now search Craigslist, eBay, like everywhere, any place that's going to sell used things online, and I can find some of these pieces. But then when we get into the realm of other things where if you don't know the brand name, I mean, basically we have a fixed amount of time to find everything that was in the Brady Bunch house, roughly season one, season two-ish. You can only buy what's for sale, and you can only buy what's for sale if you can find it.
Right.
So if it's not advertised in a way that we see it, it's going to be hard to find it. Just seem like, you know, there's so many fans that really love the house and really care about it. If they see what our top 10 hardest to find items are, and hopefully they
can help us. I think 9 times out of 10, they were very happy to help us. Like, again, I can't say enough great things about Scott Schultz in New York, who he had already done so much of the research just in his regular life. Like, he was a lifelong fan of the show. Yeah. And we interviewed him for the show, so I have a little bit of context of, like, how far back his fandom goes. Like, he just grew up watching the show.
Yeah.
So he, off the top of his head, can tell you, this lamp is from this company, this chair is from this company.
Or some piece of glass, if I got stuck and I'm, like, searching, like, green blown glass,
in the entryway,
giant
Giant
wine glass, like a wine glass that holds half a gallon of wine.
Right.
And I'm like, I could just send him a message on Instagram, like, Scott, I'm stuck. Like, what is this thing? And he's like, search Italian Empoli glass.
Yep.
And then I do that, and all of a sudden I'm like more in the realm of finding it. And it just, like, it's not about us being the ones that had to accomplish, like, the mission had to be done. And I'm glad that we got everyone to be able to be involved.
Exactly.
Because it's, everyone, I wish every single person who was a fan could like literally walk through the house, and they can't. So, like,
that's
how
what
do we
gets
incorporate
me
them?
Exactly. That's what gets me so much, is it's like there's so much fandom out there. There are people who are lifelong fans, and they may never get to see what we got to do in person. But if we're able to make the house look as perfect as possible, and then put this together in a TV show that they can at least have that aspect, I think that's also part of, like, the really fun thing
so
that we got to do.
So back to our, you know, our specific things that we were talking about, like in that rush to finish, is like we had to find everything. And there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of, like, down to like pencils and toothbrushes and things like that.
Yeah,
like custom wallpaper, custom couches, custom everything.
Toys, light switches, the vinyl countertops, the stonework, like we meticulously, and again, I hate saying we because it's more not necessarily me, it's like the whole entire team, but together we work collectively for hours and hours and hours on end, you know, to make sure that everything was as precisely perfect as possible.
Yeah.
Down to the stone shapes on the wall. We took an actual screenshot from the Brady Bunch show, put it on a transparency, projected it onto the wall.
Like a transparency that you would have had in your classroom.
Right, on an overhead projector.
They would have had it in 1972. Yep. We had exactly the same thing in 1982 because there was no new technology.
So we project the pattern onto the wall, we trace it out, and then you, Christina, Blake, Dave, we're all working together to just make sure, and piecing the stones piece by piece to make sure that it looks exactly like it does on the show. So the things that we could get exactly right, we got exactly right. And I can only hope that what we did translates well in the show. And having seen, you know, I'm working on it in the post-production, we're putting it together, I'm super impressed with how it's turning out. I'm getting chills when I watch the show. Even though I've lived with this show for so many months, you'd think I'd be bored with it by now. It still hits all the right emotional points. Something about the Brady Bunch is so special to so many people, to me included, that I don't think I'll ever get tired of watching those episodes, watching our show, and taking pride in the fact that I was at least one small cog in this team that that made the Brady Bunch house a reality. So let's wrap this up, because we literally could talk about this forever.
Yes, we have but, 8 to 9 months of talking.
And who knows, maybe we'll sit down and talk about some other aspects later on down the line. I would love to get someone else, like maybe get Christina or Blake or someone to like sit down and chat with us too. We'll get some beers, we'll loosen them up, maybe they'll be up for it at that point. But like, so now that the house is done, what is this feeling like for you having seen the house from the beginning when it looked nothing like the Brady Bunch house, and having gone through those countless hours through those many months on this very tight and lock solid schedule, the house is now done and you walk through the front door on any given day, what does that feel like for you?
It's odd, kind of, you know, getting done, leaving, kind of coming back and spending time in the house. So like when we were getting at the finish line right before we were totally complete, and it's just like a late night and you're sitting at the top of the steps like tweaking something and looking down the stairs at like this custom couch that we had to have the fabric redrawn and remade, and Dave built the coffee table and like all the stonework and this TV down there that still works and is fairly similar to the one they had in the show. And you're looking at it and it's like, we are so programmed by looking at video of the Brady Bunch, screen grabs from the show, that it exists in your brain. In a two-dimensional way. And then you're seeing it in real life in person. It kind of feels like, it's very surreal. You feel almost like you're on a set.
Yeah.
You feel like it's not real.
Right.
You almost feel like, am I at like the Brady Bunch Disney World amusement park or something? Right. Like how it was very kind of hard to get used to. So like I would say on a lot of other projects, you spend a lot of time and you make a really nice house and you walk around. There's always these things where you look at it and you're like, well, maybe I would have done this different. Yeah. Or you remember how terrible the house was when you started, but like the odd
thing. You're very meticulous and detail oriented, and I mean a perfectionist. We also have a perfectionist on our team who's just like, I mean, he was just like really a lot sometimes. And I think that you figured out a way to manage that, to be detail oriented, to make it want to be perfect without going crazy about it.
Well, there's a certain amount of like, what can you actually do? Like, what can we finish with in the time, money, everything that we got? Like, at some point you have to say, I am going to say I did the best that I could, and we've hit that. But and there's other elements, like I often will like remember what a house used to be like and how much is different. Mm-hmm. The weird thing about this is I walk in and I can't imagine it being any other way.
No, I agree.
Like I don't walk in and go, oh yeah, I remember when the kitchen was over here. I do remember when the kitchen was over in Mike's office, but in the house now, it feels like it was always like that.
I agree.
There's no other option of how it would be in there. And I don't know if that's because we're so tuned into the house from the show,
because that's
so it's just it has become that.
I have a different perspective because I'm in post now, so I'm watching all the footage that we filmed from the very beginning. So I'm looking at footage of what the house looked like, and I'm just like, wow, like it was so different. How did we take, you know, the kitchen in the front, rip it all apart, turn it into part of Mike's den, part of the living room, the closet, and then Alice's bedroom and bathroom. Like how did we do? Like I was there, and I still have a hard time. Like how did we do that? Like, but I also have a different perspective as well, because not on the construction end, being on the production end. You know, I was behind with the camera guys, or I was in the office, or we were planning and doing that kind of stuff. So
you're reliving all those moments too at the same time. So it's takes you back to how it happened. And maybe in the future, if we get Christina to participate in our conversation, we'll get Dave to
I think that's a great idea. But I say for now, let's go ahead and wrap this up, because again, we could probably talk about this stuff forever. But I think we did a really cool conversation of like kind of the overall of what the project was like, It was fun. It was hard. But in the end, the payoff is fantastic. One of the best perks of this job is being able to walk through those front doors, those Brady Bunch front doors with the door plates mm-hmm. on the door handle, the everything, like the walking down the stairs, sitting on the couch, walking up the staircase, the iconic staircase, the girls' room, the boys' room, like being in those spaces, it's like walking into your television.
Yeah.
Like it's literally like walking into television. The Brady cast themselves talk about this many, many times in their interviews about how they feel like they're back on stage five at wow. Paramount. Like their genuine reactions are like, wow. Like they couldn't believe it. You know, Christopher Knight could not believe it. And in the end, he not only ate his words, he was just like overwhelmingly.
I think there was a lot of thought of like when somebody says they're going to recreate something,
yeah.
that it's going to be like close enough.
Right.
And I'm sure they've been a part of a lot of
like
things.
Like the movies were close enough.
And like seeing that from being kind of skeptical of it from the front end of how much we never gave up on making sure that we recreated what they yeah. remember. I think they really respected that we didn't try to like
yeah.
shortcut or,
yeah.
or not do the right thing.
For me, and I'm only speaking for me, and I think some of the other team members might agree, but for me, the one big perk is being able to walk through that house and be like, wow, I feel like I'm in the Brady Bunch house. Or I'm in the Brady Bunch house. I feel like I'm in the Brady Bunch show. Yeah. And the second thing is being able to work with like the Brady cast, like having, you know, like Maureen McCormick like give you a hug, or have Eve Plum like message you privately asking how your day is, and cracking jokes with Christopher yeah. Knight or Mike Lookinland
and stories of like
Barry and Susan. Yeah, it is unlike anything I think I will ever do for the rest of my life in television production. It is uniquely something that will never be recreated, even if we did something else. Even we joke about like, let's buy another fictional house and like make it a reality. Like that could happen, and that would be fun too. But there's nothing like the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
There's nothing like the team that we were blessed to be assembled together with. And there's nothing that's ever gonna match the time that we spent together. I mean, I think I've made lifelong friends on this show. You know, you and I have talked about, mm-hmm. like, we have plans to hang out and go to concerts months from now. And
right.
I'm sure that, you know, as much as we basically lived together
right.
for all these yeah. many months. Yeah. I mean, you can't
We're
not...
our own Brady Bunch.
We are. I think we
it
definitely...
It was more than six kids, but we definitely had our own little dynamic and stuff and...
So, all right. So I'm just going to go ahead and wrap this up. And I want to thank you for taking the time. I know that your time is very valuable, and I'm glad that you are back in LA to hang out. So
well, thanks for having me.
We're going to end this podcast, and then we're going to go out and do some fun LA things.
Good.
And I'm sure you'll hear about it on a future podcast, or you'll see it on my social media or something. But
and we'll have to do this again.
I will make sure to, I'm just going to say it right now. So you can hit up Dylan on Instagram. Like his Instagram is?
It's Dylan_Eastman.
So it's Dylan_Eastman. And for sure, if you have any other questions or you want me to pass along any messages, you know how to get a hold of me at Trent Venegas on all socials. And so that's it for now. I'll come back at you some other time. Later. Bye.